Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Latest Dose, the podcast that discusses market trends, what's new in the industry, and forward-looking approaches to clinical research. I'm your host, Kathy Vandebelt, Global Vice President of Global Clinical Innovation at Oracle Health Sciences. Our topic today will be about the future of decentralized trials and remote visits in regards to patients and sites. What capabilities and technologies do and will site staff and patients need for clinical trials? In this discussion, we'll talk about the diversity of the site and patient community, how current trends like patient-centric trials are empowering the site landscape, and how the pandemic has helped shape the way patient-facing, decentralized clinical trials and remote visits of the future are conducted. I have the pleasure of speaking with Casey Orvin, Senior VP of Pharmaceutical Relations at StudyKit today. Casey has about 20 years of experience working with the site community. He has served as president of the Society for Clinical Research Sites and is now serving as honorary president, where he continues to be an advocate for site sustainability. Casey, there's no question that you're passionate about clinical research sites, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks for the opportunity to be a part of this podcast, and thank you for giving me and StudyKit an opportunity to have this discussion with you. I look forward to the next several minutes with you.
So before we jump into topics about, you know, patient-facing and decentralized clinical trials and remote visits, do you want to share a little bit of basics around what is the site and what is the patient community? Like, how would you describe that to everybody?
Absolutely. Yes. I love to share the basics with people, because when people ask, what is pharmaceutical research? What do you do? It's such a wide, a big question to ask. But in very basic terms, it's important that we as a society, right, we're continually looking for better and newer treatments for diseases that we all face, or that we have loved ones that faces. So if you look at the advancements of medication over the years, we have new drugs now that sometimes have dropped the death rate by 80-85%. We have new ways of taking medication, maybe a pill rather than an injection. So these new drugs, of course, require a lot of testing, really to make sure that they are going to do what they say they're going to do, that they're going to be effective in managing that disease or treating that disease or curing that disease. So you have the big pharmaceutical companies that we call sponsors, of course, and then some sponsors choose to contract part of their research out to another organization. So we have the contract research organizations, which you'll hear a lot about, CROs. So you have really those sponsors and those CROs. And the other big important pieces of this mix of what happens in clinical research is we have IRBs, institutional review boards, which make sure that everything's going to be conducted ethically and that we're going to follow all the rules correctly. But then the big thing are the volunteers that are going to participate in the study. Without the volunteers, without those people saying, yes, I will volunteer to participate, and I will abide by coming into the physician's office, and I'll be part of this research with the mindset that they're going to help not only themselves, but others around them and future generations, really. So those volunteers need to be seen somewhere, and where they are being seen, we refer to that as a site. So we really have the four basics: the sponsors and CROs, the IRBs, the sites, and then ultimately the patients.
Awesome. So this word site, though, which, you know, I've heard you just have spoken about, often means different things to different people, though. So like, it could be a building, it could be a group of people. And so can you sort of explain, you know, what a site really is?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great question. For those listeners who are not familiar with our industry, the site is basically the location where the clinical research is being conducted. Right? There's thousands and thousands of locations all around the world. And at any given time, there's thousands and thousands of new drugs that need to go through that safe and organized and very scientific approach to prove their efficacy, really to prove that they're going to do what they are intended to do. So these sites could be standalone research sites, right? A brick and mortar building, that's all they do in that building is conduct clinical research. And we have different phases of research as well. You have a phase one where it's a people and volunteers are spending the night, and it's a very very intense research opportunity. But more in our industry, we're a lot of times focused on the phase 2 through 4, where we're really looking at a wider population of patients. And we're looking to see really if, you know, is 10 milligrams just as effective as 20 milligrams? Well, then if so, then let's start prescribing 10 milligrams, that type of thing. We call those phase 2 and 3. But these sites could be, again, standalone research centers, kind of a brick and mortar, just doing research in those buildings. They could be private practice physician offices that also conduct research on the side. You have hospitals, you have university and academic centers. So you have many different types of sites that are out there. You know, prior to joining StudyKIK, I had the opportunity to lead the Society for Clinical Research Sites, which you mentioned. And SCRS, we represented 10,000 sites all across the world. So it's important to keep in mind that these activities aren't just happening in the US, they're happening worldwide. So we would have conferences in Australia, we'd have conferences in London, we had site memberships that were in South Africa. All these sites, regardless of their size, regardless of the structure, we all have the same goal. And really that is to provide potential patients with the opportunity to be part of a study that's not only helping them, but helping their friends and family and future generations.
Yeah, because like you said, it's, you know, these volunteers could come from anywhere and they learn about these opportunities, or someone brings these opportunities to them to consider. And it's important that we get these volunteers from a lot of these different locations as well. We hear a lot of things that are discussed around, you know, being patient centric. So you talked about, you know, the fact that in some cases for this, we're dealing with patients that have like maybe high A1C, and so therefore they've got diabetes and so forth. And then now we're hearing about, you know, where should these be conducted? Should be they conducted at these hospitals or these doctor's offices, or should they be decentralized? Should they be more out in the community or at people's homes or at different locations? And then we hear things about remote, these things called remote monitoring. So these all seem to have effects on the individuals that work on sites, as well as effects on the volunteers that participate in some cases. So, right. You know, these seems like things are changing and hopefully changing for the good. You know, what are your, you have a lot of experience, you know, you've interacted with a lot of these people. What do these trends mean? Are they seen as being positive? Are they seen as being indifferent?
Absolutely. And I think a little bit of both, but I do want to touch on several things. I'll go back just with one thing that you mentioned. The number one thing, if I could pick one, as to why more people don't really participate in and volunteer for research is just strictly knowledge and education. They don't know that it's going on in their communities, right? So on the that's one of the bright sides, I think. If we look at the terrible COVID that, you know, the COVID-19 experience that we've all gone through the last several months, and the world is experiencing right now, the world is gaining knowledge of our industry, right? They're gaining knowledge about how research is conducted. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because now on the news every night, we're talking about how soon can we get a vaccine for COVID? What are the treatments like? And never before has there been so much, I think, positive conversations and positive just news stories and talk about our industry, about research. So what does it mean to volunteer for a study? People are now saying, wait, can I do that? I can participate in this COVID-19 vaccine study? Absolutely, yes, you can. So, and how long the process takes, such as vaccines, we need to make it available to the public. And only after it's gone through all those necessary steps and phases is it going to be released and you know, proven that it's safe and effective. So that knowledge and education is happening right now. But I think that now in this post-COVID, we've kind of tackled that obstacle of knowledge and of education. So I know that I think that's a positive thing, you know, when we look at how we can kind of move to the next step. And you mentioned the trends. Many of the trends that we're seeing right now have been around for years, but really COVID-19 catapulted them from being that's nice to have, to really becoming a necessity. And you mentioned patient centricity. You know, that's been a buzzword for several years in our industry. And it's so important because it means the patient or the volunteer is at the center of what we do. And it and that needs to be our mindset all the time. What are we doing for the patient? How do we make this easier for the patient? One thing that I've learned just in the last few months with StudyKick is how important it is to reach those patients that may not have been reached otherwise. And we do that through social media. You know, we're all on our phones. We're all at our computer throughout the day. And we need to make it as easy as possible for people to know about the research being conducted in their communities. And then letting them know how important it is to be involved and really kind of extending that invitation for them to be involved. We talk about decentralization, and that's really taking things or events that typically took place in one spot and dispersing them throughout throughout the different spots. You know, all the visits used to be done at the physical location, but that's not the case anymore. Now, a lot of protocols are being written, and protocols that were in place are being amended to allow for virtual visits. And that's one of the biggest trends that we've seen. And even the year ago at SCRS, we kind of saw this, but we started at that point saying, hey, sites, it's in to your advantage to become trained on how to do these virtual visits and remote monitoring, same concept, instead of the monitors, you know, going out to the site and doing all their monitoring visits physically at that location. Are there things that can be done remotely? Can they verify data without being physically on the site? So this change has really had a ripple effect in our industry. Sponsors and CROs are impacted. Like I mentioned before, protocols are being amended. They're having to write protocols differently to allow for these virtual visits. And sites are being impacted. And the patients are being impacted. And I think the patients are being impacted in the most positive way because we're giving them choices.
Do you feel, are we equipped to do this? Is this something that can be sustainable?
Yeah, I do think we are. You know, we may not be right now, but we've got to, from a site perspective, we've got to realize that this is the future. We've made so many advances that we may not stay at this extreme because once you know, we're all feel more comfortable of going outside of our homes, we more feel more comfortable traveling longer distances, getting back on that subway, getting back on being out in public more. We may see that pendulum swing a little bit back to where it is now, but it will never go back to where it was pre-COVID, in my humble opinion, because I think that we are seeing things that we've all wanted for several years. We've wanted to have the ability to do visits via our phone, visits via our computer. We just did not have, I think, I don't know if it's the resources or we didn't have the knowledge or companies weren't implementing different things that allowed that, where we have been forced to do that the last 6 months. So I think the trends that we're seeing will continue, and the sites need to be as prepared as possible to do that. And there's some pros and cons when we talk about hybrid studies at the site level. You know, some of the pros are we now able to reach patients in a wider geographical area? You know, for patients that may have said, you know, I cannot afford, I don't have time or the resources to travel 30 minutes to a site for 10 times. You're asking me to come to this site 10 times. But if we said, hey, what about 6 times? You know, the other 4 you can do right from your home. The other 4 you can do through your phone, through an app. Well, that may change their minds of participating in that study. So I feel strongly that we have a wider geographical reach in order to pull these patients in. We can also, because we are not spending as much time and effort at the site level in conducting those studies, that we may be able to enroll more patients into those protocols that we're participating in, or we may be able to take part in different protocols, in additional protocols. So I think if we look at it from a site level, there is some opportunity there for growth in both geographical area of which the volunteers are coming from, and the ability to conduct more protocols at the site.
So I guess there's always a lot of conversations around, okay, these changes are significant enough though that operations, both with at the patient level as well as the volunteer level, and at the staff level, that it's changed enough. That how do you see the operations, or basically measuring the operations and the interactions with patients, changing because of this?
Yeah, and that is something that will change at the site level. You know, I'm a strong believer. I've always been a stronger believer in relationships and how important relationships are. And in our industry, you know, the relationship between that patient and the study coordinator is key. They need to feel comfortable with the study coordinator. They need to trust the study coordinator. They need to trust the principal investigator, the PI that's participating in the study. With the implementation and the having more hybrid studies, we lose some of that relationships, right? We lose those number of contacts that we're having with that patient. So I think it's going to be a challenge at sites and challenge in that not something that can be overcome, but it will be a different conversation with the patient saying, hey, you will not be seeing me every time, but here is why this is a good thing. And really kind of selling it to the patient that your convenience, your time, these things that we've put in place that even though from an operational standpoint, you're not going to see us, we're still here. We're still here if you have questions. We're still here if you want to talk, if you need to talk, if you have any concerns at all, we're still here, even though we may not be seeing you as many times. You know, from a site perspective too, it will be releasing some of that oversight back to the patient, back to other vendors that may be doing the home visits. And I think that's one thing that we as an industry are going through right now in having that trust that, hey, if my staff is not going and conducting some of those visits, I need to make sure that I still have proper oversight and that they're being trained in a way that I feel comfortable that the visits are still happening, that the criteria is still being met. And so I think that's one challenge that we're going through the industry right now because it has been implemented so quickly in the last 5 to 6 months. You know, come March or back in March, sites really, like the world, were shut down, right? There were several weeks that nothing was happening. And from an operational standpoint, that really hurt sites. And we know that sites, and SCRS has conducted these metrics for many, many years, but 66% of all sites had less than 3 months of operating cash on hand. So when the world shuts down, when protocols are not being sent, when activities are not happening for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, you can see how that's going to be impactful to the site from a financial perspective.
Wow.
And yeah, and it really has been a challenge and it's been interesting to see. And we have, unfortunately, there are some sites that will not be able to pull out of this, that will have to close their doors. There are other sites that fortunately, had enough resources and were able to survive. You know, I think we're seeing a definitely an uptick now in the last month or so of protocols coming off of being on hold, activities resuming at the site level. We had some sites that are able to participate in vaccine studies, and they've wanted to for years and years, and vaccines is something I've worked on for several years in my career. And there was always kind of a core group of sites that were able to participate in those vaccine studies. And now there are many more sites out there because we need, you know, hundreds of thousands of volunteers to participate in these COVID vaccine studies. So there are some challenges for sites, one being the PI oversight, two, enough work coming in where they were able to keep their employees employed. But we're seeing kind of an uptick in that now. And I can see even with my role at StudyKIK of how many patients are now being required to be back on studies, you know, and the lifts being, or the holds being lifted.
So I always, and this could be totally wrong, so correct me if this is wrong, I always had the impression that on average, so not saying that this is everybody, but on average that clinical research was sort of conducted during the workday from wherever location you were. So depending on where you in the world, it was sort of like a 9-to-5 type activity. So with these changes, is this going to move to like a 24/7 activity and it's going to be requiring sort of a whole different staffing model?
Yeah, you know what, that's interesting. I think we'll see some of that as we move into the new way of doing studies where patients are not coming to the site as many times, you know, because those sites oftentimes are open. And instead of the 8-to-5, I think a lot of sites are maybe that 6-to-7, you know, to where they can see patients an hour or two before they go into work, see patients an hour or two after work, so that you are not interrupting their work schedule. So I know that's common in the site world. So I think what we will see is more patients conducting activities pertaining to their protocol and the studies that they're on in all hours of the day. And we want that to be the case because we want the patient and the volunteer to be a part of the study and it not to interfere with other parts of their life. We don't want it to interfere with their relationships, whether their marriage or their kids, or we want it to be as easy for them as possible so that they will enjoy the journey that they have on this research they're being a part of. I do think that we will see, you know, as we see patients doing more on an app, you know, or we're implemented something recently where gamification, which for adolescents and pediatric patients, where they become a character in a game, you know, and to where it's fun for them to participate in the study. And as they overcome and as they participate and they complete different activities, then they advance into different levels. So I think we have to change the way we're doing things, and that will in turn change the way that the industry and the success that we have in our industry.
So based on your vast experience, what kind of technologies do you first see the sites needing to empower them to move into this new normal? And then what you talked a bit about, you know, what could help the volunteers. I thought you gave some great examples, and do you have other advice that we could also do for the volunteers?
Yeah, I think technology is going to be huge, and it has been in the last year or so, and really kind of like I mentioned before, catapulted in the last 6 months. But the technology in that having apps, having the ability to conduct e-consent, you know, to where patients aren't just traveling to a location to sit down and read through the consent that maybe 10, 12, 15, I've seen up to 25 pages of consent, that why can't they do that on their phone? Why can't they do that from the comfort of their home rather than being at the office? And that saves not only time and energy on their part, but it also frees up the time that is being, you know, the coordinator's time and the site staff time at the site. So I think when we talk about technology, the ability to do e-consent, e-COA, the ability to have different apps to where we can check in, and we are a tech society, and the industry has to keep up with those technology advancements. And I think patients appreciate that. Patients know that and they understand it. And some, to be very honest, unless we are tech savvy, they won't participate in the study.
So Casey, if it was 12 months from today and we were having this conversation, I'm going to finish off by asking you, what do you think we'd be talking about?
You know, we will still probably be talking about the changes and how grateful we were for some of those changes that happened during COVID. I think we will be talking about, can you believe that we used to have every patient coming in for every site? You know, how great it has been and how nice it has been for patients now to have the choice on if they want to come to the site or if they want to have the visit conducted in the home. I think that will be one trend, Kathy, that in 12 months time, we'll look back and say, oh, why didn't we do that sooner? This has been great. I think we'll also look and say different services like e-consent. I think we'll have a much wider or a lot more sponsors and CROs that are implementing different ways that we can do things through our phones, through apps. Technology will continue to advance, but really to embrace, I'd give one final advice, is to really embrace the technology, right? Embrace telemedicine, embrace e-consent. So we're in a rapid recovery right now, but it's for the patients. And we got to keep that in mind for those that, you know, have a desire to find new cures, create vaccines, better their lives, better the lives of others. That's who we're in it for. So that's who we need to kind of make up the time for. So taking part of a study can be a very selfless act. And it's why we all, site sponsors, CROs, labs, service providers, all of us, we need to do everything possible to make sure that that patient's journey is going to be one that they love to participate in, that they love to be a part of it, and they can't wait to be in the next study, and they can't wait to tell their family and friends about it. So we're in a unique time, but I think that we are seeing and we're experiencing things in our industry like never before, and there's a lot of positivity in that.
I agree. I I will echo what you said, is that without the volunteers, without the individuals that unfortunately are facing sometimes these very difficult illnesses or difficult times before them, without these patients, we don't have studies. And so it's important to figure out how to make it easy and productive and effective for all these individuals to participate. So we really appreciate all that you had to share and that we need to know about what's going on right now in the industry and what's important for sites and what's important for patients. We couldn't ask for somebody that doesn't understand this industry better than you. We really appreciate your time and thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity that you've given me and a study kick to be a part of this podcast. It's been enjoyable.
Thank you for listening to The Latest Dose, the podcast that discusses market trends, what's new in the industry, and forward-looking approaches to clinical research. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us for more in-depth looks into the life science industry. See you next month.